You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Raptors Rapture Podcast.
So it looks like the Raptors' luck is turning back towards them. This is the Raptors Rapture Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter Serpless. Thank you so much for listening. As always, always remember to rate, review, subscribe, all that fun stuff. You can check us out, raptorsrapture.com. Once again, back-to-back weeks, my guest on the show is Lior Kozai, a contributor, writer for Raptors Rapture. Lior, my man, how's it going?
Good. How's it going?
Fantastic. Fantastic. You were telling me before you're waiting for the football games to start. So hopefully we'll be able to get this one over quickly. So this week, not exactly, we mentioned it last week on the episode, not a whole lot going on in terms of games for the Toronto Raptors. Just two, one against the Portland Trailblazers and then against the Charlotte Hornets, and they were sandwiched right in the middle of a bunch of days off. So Tuesday, Wednesday they played, they had Thursday, Friday, and Saturday off, then they play again on Sunday. The Toronto Raptors right now sit fourth in the NBA's Eastern Conference, same thing as last week, behind the Boston Celtics, behind the Miami Heat, and behind the Milwaukee Bucks, but ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers and the Indiana Pacers, and everyone after that doesn't really matter all that much, I must say. Still really good defense, second in the NBA. Not a great offense, 17th. But like I said, guys are injured. However, Norman Powell, I got a notification on my phone today from my basketball fantasy league that Norman Powell, his game time decision was turned into a healthy and is looking to play tonight. So it looks like he is going to be back. Pascal Siakam, we've heard good news from him. He is going to be practicing this week and hopefully will be making a return sometime in the near future. And Marc Gasol is looking to be coming back at some point in the near future as well. So like I said at the top, the luck might actually be turning in the Raptors' favor. Lior, how big is that for the Raptors, who have been able to stay afloat amid all these injury issues?
I'm not a big superhero guy, but you know that scene in like the Avengers where like they're gathering all the people and like they get like all the different superheroes together and it's like one at a time. I'm in. That's what it feels like right now for the Raptors. You got Powell coming back, Siakam, and then it seems like Gasol is maybe like a week and a half or 2 weeks away. But if you get all those players healthy with already these role players, these bench guys playing well, looking a lot more confident. Like, then we talk about a guy like McCaw, who's like, he was really struggling when everyone else was healthy. If those guys can keep that confidence that they've gained now from getting more consistent minutes, that would be huge to have now your more talented starters back, but then also have these bench guys who can contribute. So really looking up for the Raptors.
Yeah, and they're now in a really easy part of the schedule as well. So hopefully getting these guys back in and back on a roll with one another and kind of back into the zone that we saw them at the end of last year and the beginning of this year when, you know, the two games they were actually all healthy. But I looked at powerrankingsguru.com, and they do a strength of schedule for the teams. And up until this point, the Raptors' strength of schedule has been the 10th hardest in the NBA. And going forward throughout the rest of the season, it's the 30th hardest, the 30th hardest, Jesus. So as you can guess, they're going to be playing a lot of rat teams. This week especially is going to kind of when it starts. They've got San Antonio on Sunday, then Wednesday they've got OKC, but after that it's Washington, Minnesota, Atlanta. Then they're going to have a depleted Sixers, then the Knicks, the Spurs again, Hawks, Cavs, Pistons, Bulls. Those are some good games that you want to see guys coming back into the lineup and getting back into their rhythm. Because like if Pascal Siakam comes back in a game against the Atlanta Hawks, he could drop 50 points in his first game back with a bad leg or a bad, you know, any of these guys could really do that.
I think I could drop 50 points against the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, I've seen your jump shot on Twitter. You know, it's possible. It's possible.
I think you just need to be able to put the ball in the basket. I think a lot of us could. But yeah, like you said, really softer part of their schedule coming up. And like, it's pretty amazing that they've kind of endured like the harder part of the schedule despite the injuries. I think after the Charlotte game, I think the Raptors would be 20-1 against teams under 500. Which is incredible, obviously. Only the Lakers are undefeated against teams under 500, and the only loss they've had is that loss in Portland, against Portland on Tuesday, which was a 2-point loss. So taking care of business against the bad teams is like a big thing for becoming a good team, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned that success against the bad teams in the league, and especially in the Eastern Conference, when you do have so many of those bad teams, like I mentioned, the Bulls, the Hawks, Pistons aren't very good at all. They haven't really been able to take care of business on the good teams in the league. The Bucks, the Sixers, they've had notable losses to them. The Celtics, the Heat, they've lost to pretty much every good team in the league or in the Eastern Conference, and as well as the Western Conference, in the Lakers and the Clippers there. But how important is it that this team has stayed afloat throughout these injuries? And is a second part of this question, is an addition of Pascal Siakam, I know he hasn't been out for the whole season, but is that addition about as good as it gets for one of the teams in this Eastern Conference at the trade deadline kind of thing?
I mean, Oladipo, I guess, depending on how healthy he is, like that was such a major injury that it might be a little harder for him to recover to his full strength. But he's going to be pretty big, I would say, for the Pacers. But yeah, like it's hard to beat Siakam. Just I would say he's even taken a step above Oladipo this year. And he's pretty much the third or fourth best player in the East behind like Giannis, Embiid, maybe Jimmy Butler. So he's a huge part of the, he's just a huge addition to get, and to get him with those other guys is just, is crucial. And it almost, yeah, it makes me think like, obviously we talked last week about the Raptors looking to trade for someone and maybe acquiring a minor piece, but just getting everyone back to full health, I think is a bigger addition than that. And getting Siakam back, especially if he's 100% and hopefully his injury wasn't too major, I think that would be huge for them.
So we're not necessarily sure whether he's going to be coming back within this week or if they're going to wait a little bit since the schedule is is lighter, and they did have 4 days off in between games from Wednesday until tomorrow's game Sunday. They'll probably play it safe with a guy like Siakam and the way that the guys have played, and we're going to talk about Terrence Davis later, but you know how he had a big game and was able to step up, and how not just him, but everybody on the team. You mentioned McCaw earlier. He's been able to step up. Ibaka stepped up in Gasol's place and as in the starting role. Boucher stepped up. Hollis Jefferson has stepped up. We can go through the whole roster, which I basically just did, and say, you know, everyone has played well, and they've had their moments, and they've had games where they've been, if not the best player on the court, one of the best players on the court on either defense or offense. And that's such an important thing to do for this Toronto Raptors team, and to continue hopefully that can continue, and the confidence is up when these guys come back, that even if a Terrence Davis isn't going to only get 8 to 10 minutes a night when everyone is fully healthy, or Ibaka's role is decreased, or Boucher, the minutes that they do play will be as good as the minutes that they've been playing now. And you know, it's obviously, you can't look like that, because a lot of the time, you know, if your role decreases, maybe your confidence wanes. And when that happens, your play starts to go, and it's just a downward spiral from there, potentially. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But it does seem like these guys on the Toronto Raptors are kind of built different, and they don't necessarily need that. They don't need that kind of confirmation from the coach or from the starting lineup and whatnot to really get themselves going.
Yeah, it's just kind of a tough group, and also just really resilient. They've all kind of had down moments, I feel like. Like, Hollis Jefferson was not playing to start the season after his injury, and Terrence Davis, obviously the big thing after that Portland game, was Nick Nurse kind of calling him out and saying, like, he played 8 minutes, he probably should have played less because he's playing so bad lately. And we saw on the flip side, him starting and playing fantastic at Charlotte, probably the best game of his young career. So all these guys have kind of had rough stretches, injuries for various guys, like even Matt Thomas and McCaw both had injuries, and they've kind of bounced back and are really, a lot of them are really thriving right now, just these role players. And that's really, I think it speaks to just their confidence and their kind of assurance in their own game, and knowing their own abilities. And that's a really good thing to have, because you need to be confident in order to succeed in NBA.
So when everyone is back and healthy, who, like, are you gonna, as a Raptors fan, are you looking at this team and saying, you know what, we might as well stretch the rotation to 10, 11, 12 guys maybe, because, you know, there's 12 guys on the team who contribute 5+ points per game when they're out on the floor. And that's saying something for a team like that. There's a lot of contributors, a lot of players who can play minutes. And obviously those numbers are up because they're getting more minutes now, and not all 12 guys are playing. Not all 12 guys are getting 5 points a night every single game. But when you look at the team, are you thinking, okay, when all these guys are back and healthy, we can stretch this to a 12-man rotation? Or do you want Nick Nurse to kind of be that cutthroat like he was at the beginning of the season and keep it to 9-10 guys in regular season games?
I'd be surprised if they play 12. That's just, like, that's so unusual for a team to go that far. But definitely, I think they'd have room for 10, and at least, like, playing, I mean, maybe 11 if you're playing guys like just a couple minutes, but that's kind of hard to get in their rhythm at that point. But yeah, like, they should be cutting Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry's minutes back. And I think that opens up some room for McCaw and Davis kind of playing in the guard spots. But I do think probably one or two of that whole 12-man group is getting phased out. And I don't know. I think it might be O'Shea Brissett, just because he's a two-way player. So they've already used quite a few of his NBA days. And it's unclear whether they're going to sign him to a guaranteed contract. And I think they should, but it's hard to tell sometimes with those two-way contracts being iffy. And I don't think Stanley Johnson will be part of the rotation. I think Matt Thomas might be someone that you use in kind of a matchup-based situation, like that zone, like that game against Miami where they're playing zone and you just can't get a shot going from your better shooter. So a guy like that you can plug and play. But I don't think all 12 will be playing every night. I think probably more like 10, but that's still an upgrade over, like, opening night when 8 guys were playing. So it's still a deeper rotation now than it was earlier in the season, which is encouraging regardless. And they're still not immune from having more injuries. Hopefully not, but it's still got to be a realistic part of their thinking there.
Yeah, I think that's what they'll do. They'll probably, Nick Nurse will probably cut it down to about 10 guys. And then in some of those games, as I mentioned, they're playing some weak teams. They'll probably let the, if, you know, they do give Oshie Brissett some games, get him in there against maybe a Bulls team, or, you know, Stanley Johnson, try to get his confidence up and give him some more minutes against, I don't know, the Washington Wizards or something like that. And for the most part, when they're playing the teams like the Bucks and the Pacers and the Nets and what the and those kind of teams, they'll probably keep it to a shorter rotation, as you'd expect when playing the better teams, have your best guys out there as much as possible. We'll put a plug in that. Yeah. Okay, not the Nets. Fair enough.
Can we talk about the Nets? The Nets are not good. Like, they were favored. They were favored by Vegas against the Raptors. It was like -130 or something. Like, I bet
on it when it was when the Raptors were, like, to bet on the Raptors was a plus +150. So I bet before the game. And so I put $200 down on it because I was like, there's no way they're losing. Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done. But I made $300 off it. So, like, I was like,
I mean, they could have lost the game, but, like, they were shooting terribly and were still, like, in the game at halftime. And all they really needed was to get a few shots going from Lowry and VanVleet. But the Nets were favored against the Heat last night. And, I mean, I guess they won, so that it's not, like, totally wrong. Or they weren't favored, but they were, like, it was almost even money. And I just don't see it. Like, they're not very good. They have good guards and Dinwiddie and LeVert, but they're not in that upper tier of the East. And I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I'll edit the Nets out of that out of that list of teams I just put in there. You talked me. But yeah, right. Like, they're gonna have you know, against the top tier teams, they'll be good.
Back to the program. Yeah.
So we'll put a plug in on that one. And we talked about this last week, the All-Star voting. Not a whole lot has changed in terms of where Pascal Siakam lays. He's still third. Kyle Lowry jumped up a little bit. We don't need to talk about it a whole lot just because we did a big conversation on that last week. But Pascal Siakam, 1.7 million votes, just behind Joel Embiid, way behind Giannis, who's far and ahead leading the Eastern Conference front court. And then, like I said, Kyle Lowry, sixth, 567 votes, behind Zach LaVine and Derrick Rose and Trae Young and Kyrie Irving. So I think the coaches and players are probably going to give him a little bit more love than the fans have given him thus far. But, you know, Pascal Siakam's essentially a lock right now to be a front court starter. The only one who really looks like he's going to be able to catch him is Jimmy Butler. And he's still 300,000 votes behind. And Pascal is looking like he might even be able to leapfrog over Joel Embiid at some point. But, you know, that's All-Star voting doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. So we probably won't spend a whole lot of time talking about that throughout this season. Moving on, however, Fred VanVleet has been targeted by the Detroit Pistons as someone that they want to go for in the offseason. Should Raptors fans be worried? Are you worried? Is there anything that you think that Detroit has over Toronto in terms of bringing him in instead of saying a Raptor?
I mean, the only thing that they could really have is just offering more money. Like, you don't, I assume he doesn't want to live in Detroit that badly. There's no upside for the team. Blake Griffin's on a big contract and has chronic injuries. Andre Drummond appears to be on the way out. They don't really have anything going for them, per se. They're obviously, the appeal for them is they're a middling franchise and they can get a really good young point guard. But I would assume they just throw a lot of money his way, something like what Malcolm Brogdon got, or maybe even more than that, which was 4 years, $84 million. So it's really just about the Raptors, if the Raptors will match whatever offer they give, like if they'll give a competitive offer, because the Raptors have obviously helped him build his career. It's a good system. They've been just winning. Like, people are starting to compare them to the Spurs almost because of how they can win despite injuries, and they can kind of sustain no matter who's in the lineup. So I think that's a really good environment for point guard to grow in. Kyle Lowry's kind of getting older, so Van Vliet presumably has the starting spot lined up for him if he wants it. And it would surprise me if Van Vliet wanted to leave all that, unless he's just getting a ridiculous offer, which I understand if he wants more money.
Yeah, and like, to me, there's no way you should go to Detroit. No matter what, you're going to be second fiddle to Blake Griffin in terms of, you know, he's going to be making more money than you with his huge contract. When he's healthy, he's going to be the best player on the floor. So you're going to be the de facto number two, if not three, if Drummond is still there, because for some reason people just love Andre Drummond in Detroit. But then if Blake Griffin's not there, if Andre Drummond does end up getting traded, and if Blake Griffin's injured, then it's just you with a bunch of rat players, and you can basically be 5-team. You know, the other team can throw the whole defense at you, and you know, you're still gonna lose the game.
It's a lose-lose.
Yeah, of course Detroit's interested in getting Fred VanVleet. I would be too if I was Detroit. I would be interested if I'm 29 other teams in the league if you can get Fred VanVleet on a good contract, which, you know what, he's earned his money and he's made it. But I do think that, like, the way that he is, his whole bet on yourself mentality, you're not betting on yourself if you go to Detroit, Fred VanVleet. And I think he knows that. And like, as much credence as this has, and as legit as this report is, like, I don't doubt that Detroit's there. I don't think they're going to be a player for him in free agency. But as the Raptors, Lior, if you were management, do you look at giving Fred VanVleet a 3-year, 4-year contract to try to keep him around as, like you mentioned, Lowry kind of fades out into the end of his career and the twilight of his prime, to keep him around and maybe kind of ruin that 2021 free agency? Or do you maybe think about letting him go, or, God forbid, trade him before the trade deadline comes up if you hear that maybe he will be looking for, you know, $25, $30 million from teams in the offseason?
I think you have to just throw, like, basically whatever you can at him. Like, I think, I guess it depends how far that contract's going to go, but I think you throw a lot of money at him. Like, at least what Brogdon got, I think, is a good comparison for him. But the only major contract the Raptors have on the books after 2021 is Norman Powell's 1 year after that, for $11.6 million. And I think with the way Powell played before his injury, that's a really tradable contract. So if you really want that space for, like, two max guys, let's say, in 2021, which is even pushing it considering Toronto's free agency history, but if we're assuming they could get at least one, like, having only Fred VanVleet on the books would still leave plenty of space. And I think that's doable. I think that's realistic. And I just think, VanVleet is at least worth, like, somewhere in that $20 million range. We saw guys like Terry Rozier and Rubio get $18 million or so, which you can say is an overpay, but everyone's kind of getting money like that. And VanVleet's a really good player. He was a key guy on a championship team. And I think he's shown a lot this year. Just, I didn't really think he had it in him to be this good of a creator and this good finishing at the rim. And I think he improved those skills that much that he's kind of showing he can be a starter, and he's going to command starter money. So I get it. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, you should throw the bag at him. And if there is one player to trade in terms of the guards, I said this on last week's podcast, it's probably going to be Kyle Lowry rather than Fred VanVleet, just based on age. You know, they essentially play like the same player. I think Kyle Lowry has a slight edge defensively, but, you know, they're not that much different on the offensive end. I think Kyle Lowry's IQ is there, but that will also come with age in terms of Fred VanVleet learning the floor better and learning from a guy like Kyle Lowry and learning his teammates and Pascal Siakam and whoever else, Norm Powell you mentioned, and whoever else kind of comes and goes for this team. But you know, Masai Ujiri is smart enough to understand, you know, what's going on, not only with his team, but like the landscape of the league as well.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously I didn't factor in Siakam's extension, which is a big deal. So that's another max contract on the books, but it still leaves them with room for one max guy, I think, between whatever Fred gets and Pascal. And I think a big thing of signing a max player is there has to be some kind of foundation for them to go to. And Siakam's obviously a great start, but I think Fred VanVleet has proven himself to be such a quality player that you've already, having those two foundational guys, that would be a big attractive kind of destination to go with the infrastructure, the coaching. And then you've also got just a really solid foundation of players. And yeah, and I think it makes sense to try to keep that core together. And they're also only 25, 26 years old in Siakam, and then VanVleet similar, a little younger than him.
And if you were to, you know, if you were given only, you can only keep one of these two players, and that's probably what it is going to end up being between Lowry and VanVleet, which one are you leaning towards?
I mean, it's tough for me because I just love Lowry, and I almost think it doesn't have to be a choice. I think maybe Lowry takes a discount or something. I think he would want to finish his career here. Like, his kids have grown up here, and it kind of makes sense for him. But if you have to choose, like, you almost want to say it has to be VanVleet just because of the direction the team's going and the cold-blooded kind of nature of Masai sometimes with how he wants to operate and just look for what's best for the team. But I don't think it will come down to that. I think they can keep Lowry and kind of just ease into this transition. I mean, it's not like the cleanest thing to have 2 6-foot tall point guards, but like, they're obviously very smart players, like you said, and they've done really well together this year. And I think you could find a way to ease into that. And I think Lowry's game will age well, just the way with his elite shooting and being a really physical player. I think that helps as a point guard.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I mean, you don't want to have to get rid of one, but if you're seeing both these guys kind of demanding 25 to 30 million, I think Lowry, after that 30 million extension from the Raptors, that was more of a move in and, you know, kind of giving him the bag just because we know that that 2021 is so important for the Raptors, the free agency class there, and just being able to pay him one more year was so important just to show, hey man, thanks for what you've done for this organization. No matter what happens, whether you're not on the Raptors next season, whether you're not on the Raptors in the future, we know you're at least going to be getting that $30 million. So it's kind of a sign of good faith. And, you know, we appreciate you. We love you as a organization, and you know, MLSC, we love you, the Raptors organization, Masai, Nick Nurse, everybody kind of, you know, loves Kyle Lowry. And if it's between those two, I mean, it's a really tough decision because it'll be one of those things again, where it's like, oh, you traded a fan favorite, in terms of Masai Ujiri, but I guess fans will probably understand better now because of how the last trading of a fan favorite went. Championship. So
yeah,
I don't know if you can get Kawhi Leonard again for Kyle Lowry, but
yeah, I don't think it's not quite the same because you're not going to get like such value out of him. But I think probably if I had to predict it, I'd probably disagree. Like, I don't think they're going to trade him. I think they'll find a way to keep both, and kind of maybe Lowry, like you said, like they gave him the bag already, so maybe he takes a little less, or I think they'll find a way to work it out. But I don't think it's crazy to suggest that that he's still on the table. And if there's anything Ujiri sees that's just a really good trade for him, then they will. But we'll see. And I don't think going back to the VanVleet question, I don't think they'll be too concerned with a team like Detroit. And most of the teams that do have cap space are really bad teams this summer, which plays in Toronto's favor.
And I think another thing to consider is a lot of teams do have, you know, promising young guards. So maybe getting a Van Fleet in there, and a lot of the teams with cap space I'm talking about have a lot of like kind of promising young guards, like, or
Memphis, Atlanta.
Yeah, so like those teams probably aren't going to look for a starting caliber point guard to throw a bunch of money at just to say that they have a guy who got one Finals MVP vote. Like, that's probably not going to happen, because you're not going to put Van Fleet in front of Ja Morant, and playing them together doesn't really make sense because they're so ball dominant, both of them, despite both being able to play off ball relatively well. And like, same with Trae Young in Atlanta, you're not going to throw a bunch of money at a guy who's just going to take the ball out of his hands, because that just doesn't make sense. And, you know, it might stunt the development and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not exactly worried about Van Fleet leaving. There's going to be a big market just because there's not a huge class coming out after this, like the free agent class this offseason. So we'll see how that ends up. That'll end the conversation here for the news portion. Went a little long there, but we'll be back for the on-court stuff in just a moment. So as we mentioned on last week's podcast and the beginning of this one, the Raptors had a weird schedule this week. They played just Tuesday and Wednesday back-to-back against the Portland Trailblazers and the Charlotte Hornets. They lost to Portland in that first game on a mellow game winner, which was actually kind of interesting to watch. And then they won in overtime against the Charlotte Hornets the very next night. So, Lior, we both said that they were going to go 2-0 this week, and that it was probably going to be a big win against Charlotte and a pretty impressive game against Portland, neither of which happened. An OT win, obviously, against Charlotte is not a close win or a big win, and a loss to Portland is not a win. So to you, it's hard to say any of these games are disappointing because of the injuries, but which game to you was more disappointing out of those two?
Oh, definitely Portland. I mean, even if they lost the Charlotte game, like Devontae Graham had the chance for the game winner or Rozier in overtime, like, I still think they were on the second night of a back-to-back. I think it's almost more understandable, regardless of the injuries, versus the Portland game. They outplayed them for pretty much the first three quarters, and then just some poor decision-making, poor execution down the stretch, kind of puzzling choices by Nick Nurse, which we avoid not to question him, but he can still make mistakes. And I think just all of that kind of combined for a really disappointing blown lead. Like, they had, I think, a 10-point lead going early in the fourth, and it just was not, it was really bad defense down the stretch and poor offensive execution. So that's my pick. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, neither were exactly impressive games, but the Raptors down the stretch were just really, really, really bad in Portland, and especially Kyle Lowry, really bad end of game. I mean, there.
Yeah, to excuse Lowry, like, which is kind of, obviously I'm biased here because I love Lowry, like I said on this podcast, but I would just say they were trapping him down the stretch. I'm not sure, was that the Charlotte game or the Portland, or maybe both, but they were taking the ball out of his hands, and he has, just with Van Vliet out, now you've got basically no other good creators on the floor. And like, I don't know what else he's supposed to do really when that's happening. Like, there's no like great offensive option besides Lowry. Like, you don't have a single guy who can really create his own shot at a high level. And that's why you're kind of seeing Terrence Davis was so good in that Charlotte game, because he's kind of the second best perimeter creator they have. They have healthy. And then even McCaw was doing a great job with, like, I think he had 10 assists in the Charlotte game. And that's because they really just needed someone, or he had 11 assists. They really just needed someone else to create shots. And that's kind of what happened. Obviously, Lowry wasn't good either. And he was, he took some bad shots, but I think part of that is fatigue, and part of that is just not having anyone to help him out. But yeah, playing 38 and then 43 minutes on a back-to-back is just insane. And that's obviously another benefit of getting guys back healthy, like we talked about.
Yeah, and the Raptors in this one were up 97-91 with 2 minutes, 4 seconds left, and then up 99-94 with 1:25 left, and then ended up losing that one, which, you know, not exactly an impressive thing. One thing that I will point out, however, that I think is, you know, I didn't see a lot of love for it too much after the game, just probably because they did end up losing, and obviously the big Carmelo Anthony shot, which kind of took everything over. But Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's jump ball against Hassan Whiteside was one of the more impressive parts of that game. I think it was like 30 seconds or so left in the game, and it was just like, I was watching the game with my girlfriend's brother, and we both were just like, all right, well, Hassan Whiteside's going to win this for sure, and Portland's just going to come down, and Dame's going to hit a three or something like that. And then all of a sudden, Hollis Jefferson comes up and jumps. It felt like 50 inches of vertical there, and just ended up winning it, which was absolutely crazy to me.
And late in the game, too, it's really tough to get your legs under you like that, and credit to RHJ for that.
That was fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think there were some positives we could take from it. Like, I thought O'Shea Brissett was fantastic in that Portland game, and I think he guarded McCollum for a stretch, if I'm not remembering wrong. Yeah, and he did a really good job there. And we've kind of seen him a few times now, like with Tatum, with McCollum. Just really impressive defense on the perimeter, and then he's also a really good rebounder inside. So I think that was a positive. And Chris Boucher had a great stretch there. He didn't play a lot, but he just had that fourth quarter. He was basically carrying that really, really bad offensive bench unit. And that was kind of where I was surprised, where I don't know why he didn't play down the stretch and kind of just ride the hot end. You don't have many good offensive options. So I kind of, do you have any thoughts on Nurse's reasoning for that one?
I think he was probably just going with the matchup there, because having a guy like Whiteside, despite putting in, you know, negative effort pretty much throughout every single game, he's still a massive body, and, you know, him on the boards and him in the block, like him going up against Chris Boucher, he might as well be going up against me, right? Like, we're probably in the same weight class. And so, like, that's probably what he was thinking, because Ibaka is the bigger guy, better rebounder. He's able to stretch Whiteside a little bit for, like, well, they kind of stretch the same amount, but, like, he can do a little bit more damage, and even if it's just to fatigue Hassan Whiteside out there. That's what I think Nick Nurse was going for.
Yeah, I think Ibaka did a good job. I almost would have gone with both of them and just play Boucher at the four, maybe stick someone else on Carmelo, and just hide Boucher maybe on, I don't remember who the Blazers rolled with to end the game, maybe Simons. But they started Bazemore, and he was just a non-factor. So if it's Bazemore or Simons, I think you can live with Boucher on them. And if they're going to ISO those guys on him instead of giving it to Lillard or Carmelo, then go ahead, right?
Yeah, that's probably better.
But it's easy to say in retrospect. And I get if Nurse was just thinking about the Whiteside matchup, and I don't think it's I don't think you can really put that entire loss on him. I think a lot of it was just some mental mistakes. Carmelo got like a few of those, like the corner three he had, and a couple of those other ones were just way too open, and I think the defense is kind of what let Portland back in the game, and then the offense is obviously very noticeable at the end. Anything else you wanted to talk about with that one?
No, just wanted to mention that, like, BS offensive foul.
Yeah, the legal like, screen. That was bad.
That was bad. Just because the ref was right there, right? So, like, that kind of comes into why this was, like, the more disappointing game, just because, like, that was such a big momentum changer that, like, anytime any player hits a three-pointer from like 35 feet or whatever it was from the logo, like, it's just gonna, especially to tie the game, like, it's gonna hurt the team
and
the team's confidence.
And I don't know if anyone makes this argument, but I've definitely heard, like, oh, people or refs swallow the whistle, they don't call offensive fouls in the final minute of a game. But we literally saw in game two of the finals last year, DeMarcus Cousins sets an obvious illegal screen, and they called it on the final possession or the second to last possession. And like that's the blatant call that basically frees up Lillard when you're going over the screen, and he just hip checks and moves on whoever's guarding him, and you're basically giving up an open three. So like you have to call that right in front of the ref. Like that's a big call, and that's a big swing there, obviously tying the game. So like I don't blame people for being upset, but yeah, as we talked about, there are other factors too.
So now we'll move on to that Charlotte Hornets game, which I'm actually glad we didn't talk much about, because this one, we're not necessarily going to talk about the game as a whole, but more of Terrence Davis, his game against the Charlotte Hornets. It was his first time starting as an NBA player, and he had a great game. 23 points, 50% from the field, 50% from three, 11 rebounds, 10 defensive rebounds. He was all over the place, played game-high 37 minutes, which is absolutely insane. But the big thing that kind of came from that was how Nick Nurse called him out the night before in that Portland game, basically saying he shouldn't have played at all. He was horrible, and he called him out in front of the media. I'm sure he said it to his face as well. But Terrence Davis, I don't know if you can call it a revenge game when it's against your own coach, but like that's kind of what it was. But for Terrence Davis, like, is he the next Raptors diamond in the rough? Like, do you see him maybe eventually turning into one of these really solid role players that the Raptors have been able to find, whether it's undrafting and just signing them after the draft or picking them up late in the second round or first round?
Oh, absolutely. And we saw his skills kind of in preseason and even summer league. Like, you don't want to look too much into the stats, but like he showed his skills. He showed that he can hit threes. He showed he has that pump fake off the dribble, can create plays. And then I was pretty confident in him being a rotation guy coming into the season. And even opening night, he played pretty well. He played like 15 minutes, but he showed he can play and he can hang in an NBA rotation. So I really believe in Davis as a rotation guy. I'm a little like I said he could be the starting two by the end of the season. Early in the season, I said that. And I don't really think that now, because Powell just played so well, and Lowry and Van Vliet proved that that should kind of be the starting backcourt, because Van Vliet is just too good to come off the bench now. But Davis certainly has shown a lot, and he's shown he can be a rotation guy. He's shooting really well from three, which is a huge thing for the Raps, just based on other guys struggling sometimes. OG has been in kind of a shooting slump until the Charlotte game, and I think Davis makes a lot of sense for them, and he kind of has he has the athleticism and the length to kind of be a good defensive player, even if he isn't yet. So you kind of get a guy who can do a little bit of everything, and even if it's just 15, 20 minutes off the bench for now, I think he's definitely a really good pickup as an undrafted rookie. That's huge, and he'll grow, and he's still young, so he's got a lot of potential to improve in future years.
And one of the best things about Terrence Davis is you can tell that he's really bought in to not only being a contributor for the Toronto Raptors, because a lot of people would buy into that, but also just like buying in as a whole to the system and to his teammates and to the hard lifestyle that it is an NBA game. And you see a lot of players in the NBA, especially young players, who are really good at one end of the floor and, you know, trash on defense, or vice versa, really good defensively, but like can't hit a shot to save their lives. And Terrence Davis doesn't necessarily stand out per se on either end of the floor. I think he's a better defensive player than he is offensively right now, but you can see the tools are there and the raw talent is there. And especially with fourth-year players coming out of college, and they're so used to the college game and the college systems, and I guess what I'm trying to say is like he fits in to an NBA rotation so well as a first-year player who was a four-year college player. Then he went undrafted. He's kind of got that work hard mentality where it's like, I know I'm being doubted right now because A, I didn't get drafted. B, I wasn't a number one recruit coming out of high school. C, you know, people weren't giving me Jordans every other game playing in AAU. Or maybe they were, but you didn't hear about it, right? You didn't hear about it. So I think a combination of all those, like, and coming together with this group of Raptors where Pascal Siakam was one of those guys who was kind of doubted when he got drafted. The Raptors were given horrible draft grade by just about every NBA outlet that there is. Fred VanVleet, undrafted. Norm Powell, second rounder. OG Anunoby, obviously he was highly touted coming out of college, but the injury set him back to drop to the Toronto Raptors. So being surrounded by all these guys that, you know, have been doubted throughout pretty much their whole career and not having a real star player per se on the team throughout their whole career is a really good combination to add with this guy. And it probably makes him play even harder. And the biggest thing going forward for Terrence Davis, as you would expect for just about any rookie, is just consistency, right? You know, there's games where he goes, he puts up 19 points and then the next game it's 5, or he puts up 19 points and the next game is 6, or 15 and the next game is 2. So once he can find his footing and the consistency, and once he gets into a rhythm of the NBA schedule and all that kind of stuff, it will be a different story for Terrence Davis. And I think for right now, he's got all the tools to become one of those, you know, quote unquote diamonds in the rough, just because he works hard. He is always an energy guy. He doesn't take plays off. And that's kind of like what you saw with Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet. And I'm not saying he's going to necessarily become one of those guys, but, you know, in the first 30 something games of his career, he's looking like he's going to be on track to be someone like that.
Yeah, he brings it. And like you said about the consistency, obviously that's an issue. And a lot of rookies have that kind of thing where they're just up and down and not really giving the same production every night, even if he's playing hard every night. But I think part of that is just his role has shifted a lot. And that's been due to the injuries with all these guys in and out of the lineup. He doesn't know if he's going to be playing with McCaw off the bench in kind of a two-guard lineup, or if he's going to be kind of the main ball handler, or if they're going to stagger Lowry and VanVleet because both of them are healthy. And then he can play with one of those guys, make his life a lot easier. So I think finding, having everyone healthy and having a consistent role where he knows what he's going to be asked to do and who he's going to play with, I think that would help a lot. But like you said, he has the talent for it and he brings that effort every night. And I think another thing is just the confidence to not get down after something like Nurse's comments. I think Nurse would not have made those comments, especially publicly, if he didn't think that Davis would take it as a challenge, or if he didn't think Davis could handle the criticism. And obviously Davis was not afraid of the criticism at all, and he responded really well, and he just played fantastic against Charlotte. And even when he's not getting that many minutes, he still looks confident. He still looks like he doesn't hesitate to take his threes, whereas like a guy like OG sometimes even hesitates and kind of doesn't like have that trust to always just fire away with confidence. So it's good to see Davis getting opportunities like that. And yeah, I think he'll keep it up if he finds that role where he's kind of where he knows what he's asked to do every night.
Absolutely. And to me, some credit does have to be given to Nick Nurse for calling him out, because like you said, not every player would respond well to that. Some would shrug it off and be, oh, I hate Nick Nurse, I hate this coach. But Nick Nurse, knowing his players and knowing how they'll respond to certain things, and obviously he, Terrence Davis, responded perfectly, as well as you could imagine in a situation like this. And I'm sure he came up to him either during travel or before the game saying, hey coach, listen, you're gonna call me out, let me see if I can do this, and let me put my money where my mouth is and show you that I can really be a contributor for this team. And I, that says something not only about Nick Nurse for trusting his guy to be able to go out there and not, you know, worry about ruining a team chemistry or something like that, but also has something about Terrence Davis being that guy saying, you know what, you called me out, you gave me that, I'm going to show you what I can do and see how much you're going to say that after this game. So it was a, you know, props to both the guys for that.
Yeah, no question.
So lastly, we're going to talk quickly about DeMar DeRozan coming back to the Toronto Raptors home court as the Scotiabank Arena now. Sunday night, he's going to be coming back, playing his second time back. I will be at the game on Sunday night. We're recording this Saturday afternoon, so obviously the game hasn't happened yet. But, Lior, do you think that he gets the same type of response? Obviously, it's not going to be as grand and robust and you know, theatrical as it was last season. But, you know, the return of DeMar DeRozan is always going to be emotional for the Raptors fan base, right?
Yeah, I think it will be like a similar thing. I don't think we'll be surprised by any of the reception. I think people will just give him love because people still love DeMar for a good reason.
I agree. You think he's gonna get another tribute video, or is that just a one time thing? Because I think Lou Will got one this year, right?
Yeah. I think they'll do it because they've been doing the 25th anniversary stuff. And I mean, right. like if Lou Williams is getting one for that 1 year, that kind of, I mean, it wasn't even 1 year. It was like 4 months, and then 2 months he was terrible. And like, so I think he'll get something nice. And yeah, the reception will be nice, and it will be cool to have him back. And even Poeltl, maybe they do something for Poeltl.
Yeah. It's not going to be the same, but I do think that fans, you know, maybe if they weren't there for last year's game, maybe they weren't able to get tickets, maybe it was too expensive. I think there's going to be a big ovation at some point. He's probably going to get one of his patented introductions by the guy who gives out the starting lineups and stuff. So he's probably going to get a lot of love there. And during the first timeout. Yeah. And then whenever he gets checked into the game, I'm sure he's going to get a lot of love. So, you know, DeMar DeRozan, and he's hot right now. He's playing really, really well. And he's leading the Spurs.
They've been winning some games. Yeah. I mean, they lost to Memphis last night, but they're still in the playoff race. So credit to him. And we've also got Poeltl, Marco Bellinelli, and Rudy Gay.
Huge Raptors reunion. All right, so that'll be it for our on-court stuff, and we'll be back in just a moment to give our predictions for this week. So we're back, and we are going to do our predictions for this upcoming week. Sunday, January 12th, as I mentioned, tomorrow night, San Antonio Spurs are coming to Toronto. On Wednesday, they've got another 2 days off. They're going to be in Oklahoma City playing the Thunder. Friday, they're playing the Washington Wizards. And if you want to throw in Minnesota Timberwolves, because we might have a podcast Sunday instead of Saturday, but we'll see what happens. So we'll do those four teams. How do you think the Raptors fared this week?
I guess I'll go 3-1 just to be safe. Let's go 3-1. I think they beat the Spurs, Wizards, and Timberwolves. And then the Thunder one, that's kind of a tricky one because the Raptors are the better team, but the Thunder have been on a roll lately, and let's give them that one in OKC.
I think they're going to go 2-2, lose to San Antonio, lose to OKC, and then Friday, Saturday, they're going to get two W's over some horrible teams. And hopefully Pascal Siakam will be maybe back by then. By Friday or Saturday. So I think that'll be a big addition.
Yeah, and we'll see if they have that kind of adjustment period like they did when Lowry came back and they lost kind of a few games. That was against a better schedule, so it's not quite the same. But getting a guy like Powell back, you have to wonder if he's going to shoot as well as he did before his injury. And hopefully that helps them. But yeah, I mean, the Spurs have played well. We'll see. I don't think they're as good as they were the last week or so with beating Milwaukee and Boston, but they'll compete and definitely wouldn't be shocked to see them win.
Which of these games are you looking forward to most?
I'll go with the Thunder game. I really like this Thunder team. They're kind of like, I never really liked the Thunder with Westbrook. It wasn't an enjoyable thing for me to watch, like the one guy with ridiculous usage just racking up stats. And they were okay, but like even with George, I just didn't like their style a whole lot. And Chris Paul has made them really fun. Shea Gilgeous Alexander, obviously from Hamilton. That's a fun storyline with him playing really well. And yeah, they're just kind of an interesting team to watch. How about you?
Yeah, I think OKC. For me, the Spurs game, because I'm going to be there.
Yeah,
so like that kind of trumps all. And also like the DeRozan return and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the OKC game is going to be really fun to watch just because two good teams going at it. And especially with OKC on a roll and Chris Paul playing so well. And you can really see the stark difference, like you mentioned, of how like the Westbrook team versus the Chris Paul team are really different teams. And like everyone really on the same page and playing together. So I think they're probably that's going to be a good game. And the crowd in OKC is always fantastic. So that'll be dope. But yeah, I'm going to have to go with the San Antonio Spurs game just because I'm going to be there. So that'll be it for the podcast today. As always, go subscribe, rate, review, do everything. It really helps us out. Go to RaptorsRapture.com whenever you can. You can see game reviews, grades for the players, takeaways, all that kind of stuff for every single Toronto Raptors game to go along with the opinion pieces, analysis, all that kind of fun stuff from our great writing crew here at the Raptors Rapture. Lior, where can people find you on Twitter?
It's at Lior Kozai, LIORKOZAI. I have a piece coming out possibly tomorrow on kind of some of the stuff we talked about with the Raptors just being a really resilient team and Kyle Lowry's minutes workload that maybe they need to slow down a little bit. But yeah, I'm just really enjoying this Raptors season. And it's been, I think, one of the most likable teams they've had, even including the championship team.
So yes, I'm sure that piece is going to be great. Lior, always a great read. And you can follow me on Twitter at @H_Surplus. You'll see the Twitter in the Raptors Rapture tweet, my tweet, whatever you guys are doing. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, go Raptors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.